Now, Stephen, it's up to you. We'll have the one-minute stories or what God has done into your life last week or this morning after the message.
Good morning.
How many of you keep a journal? A sprinkling. I don't write in my journal every day. But every few days, or sometimes every few weeks, I'm inspired to write something. And I want to share with you today something that I wrote in November. You may have noticed that Christine did a short reading this morning from the book of Hosea. Hosea chapter 6, 1 to 3. And Hosea was a prophet that I want to talk about today, who was very much in touch with God's heart for his people. And I spent the day on the 26th of November, Saturday, in St. Tim's Church, Leiden, which some of you may know. A small group of Christians were just enabling us to spend time in God's presence. They were sometimes singing with guitar, and sometimes it was just quiet. So I had 4 or 5 hours before I think I went to work with the antivirus medical service at about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And I spent the entire day meditating on the book of Hosea. Now, I don't know what any of you know about Hosea. And you know, it doesn't matter if you don't know much about him. Because he didn't try and draw attention to himself anyway. But you may be aware that there's a group of books in the Bible called the prophetic books, prophets. You may be aware there's a group that are called the major prophets and a group that's called the minor prophets. And the major prophets, there's three. There's Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. And they're called major because they all wrote big long books, 40 or 50 or 66 chapters. Then there's a group of what they call the minor prophets. And there's 12. And Hosea is the first of those. And those of you who memorised the books of the Bible when you were young, you remember Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. Good, isn't it? After all those years. After 50 years, I can still remember. But Hosea. I wonder if you remember the background of Hosea. Well, if you don't, let's take you to the book of Hosea. If you have a Bible, this will be good. He's got 14 chapters. He comes after Daniel. The word of the Lord, chapter 1, verse 1, which came to Hosea, the son of Beeri. That's all we know about his background. His father was called Beeri. During the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and during the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. So he prophesied 750 years before Jesus came, just before the exile into Babylon of the northern kingdom called Israel. When the Lord first spoke through Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, go take to yourself a wife of harlotry and have children of harlotry, for the land commits flagrant harlotry, forsaking the Lord. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bought him a son. So the first thing God said to this prophet was, go and marry a woman who's going to behave like a prostitute. And then the book of Hosea describes how children came out of this union. And God named them significant names. And their names indicated how God was withdrawing his blessing from the nation of Israel. And then his wife Gomer fell into prostitution and was separated from him. And in Hosea chapter 3, verse 1, God said to Hosea, "The Lord said to me, 'Go again, love a woman who is loved by her husband, yet an adulteress, even as the Lord loves the sons of Israel, though they turn to other gods and love raisin cakes. So I bought her for myself for 15 shekels of silver and a homer and a half of barley.'" So his wife had become a slave, literally, physically, through prostitution. She'd become a slave and she needed to be bought back. And Hosea followed God's guidance and bought her back and paid the price. And he said to his wife, "You shall stay with me many days. You shall not play the harlot, nor shall you have a man. So I will also be toward you." And then God applies this message to the land of Israel. "For the sons of Israel will remain for many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred pillar, without ephod or household idols. Afterward, the sons of Israel will return and seek the Lord their God and David their king, and they will come trembling to the Lord and to his goodness in the last days." And then in Hosea chapter 6, if we look at three verses there, these are the verses that Christine read. So this is the context of Christine's reading. That here is the nation saying, "Okay, we're going to return to the Lord. Come, let's return to the Lord. He's torn us, but he'll heal us. He's wounded us, but he'll bandage us. He'll revive us after 2 days. He'll raise us up on the third day that we may live before him. So let us know. Let us press on to know the Lord. His going forth is as certain as the dawn, and he will come to us like the rain, like the spring rain watering the earth." Unfortunately, that was a very half-hearted and feeble response, because the people didn't follow through on that response and they ended up going into exile despite Hosea's invitation through God. But Hosea, what's encouraging for me is that he never saw any visions from God. See, the Old Testament prophets, they saw visions, and I thought, "Oh, I wish God would give me a vision one day. Just one day, just one vision." And some people get visions and they hear words. Hosea, God didn't give him visions. God talked to him differently. God said to him, "Go marry a woman who's going to bring you great grief." And then when the woman, his wife, brought him great grief, God said, "Go marry her again. Show love. Restore her." And Hosea's character and his ability to relate to God was formed through his circumstances, and God adapted his message to Hosea through his circumstances. In fact, God ordered Hosea's circumstances so that he would become a spokesman for God. And the tone of the book of Hosea is a prophet who feels the pain of God, who therefore appeals to God's people. And in my diary, I wrote 5 verses from Ezekiel. And I don't actually have a sermon written out here. I've just got my diary with 5 verses. So maybe shorter than usual, but you never know. I've raised that hope before. At the first verse, let's see. Yes, the first verse was Hosea 6, verse 3, which says, "Let us know, let us press on to know the Lord." Here's the invitation. Life is a journey. We looked at that journey. I had the sense while we were watching those pictures of, you're on a pathway which is probably about, was it a metre wide? I thought, that's good, isn't it? Because there's a long fall on one side, and the path is strewn with leaves, and it's maybe slippery. And if you slip, you'll probably be okay because it's a metre wide. But there's other paths. that seem to be much more narrow and much more dangerous and hazardous. And you may be walking along a path at the moment that feels like it's more hazardous, more dangerous. If you do something wrong, you may feel the consequences could be catastrophic. Or maybe you don't know where your path is going. Maybe it feels like it's going round in circles. You're just coming back to where you were before. And I want to invite you to just consider your journey with God today. The invitation from that verse is, let's press on. Let's keep going. Let us press on to know the Lord. And he will come to us like the rain, like the spring rain watering the earth. I think that promises that God will not come as a thunderstorm and drown us and overwhelm us, but he comes like the rain that comes gradually, makes the earth soft and slow enough to be absorbed into the roots of the flowers and the plants, enables them to grow. So there may be an invitation there for someone. You're conscious you're walking with God. Maybe you can't see where the road is going and you need to keep going. And I wonder what that keep going means for you. Does it mean renew a habit of prayer, of being present with God? Maybe reading the Bible more regularly? Maybe carving out time to be with God? Who knows what it could be, just on your own pathway. And by the way, you have your pens and your sticky pads with you. If you sense that something is relevant for you, then just make a note of that. At the end, you can stick it on the cross, or you can just walk away with it in your pocket. That was the first verse I saw. The second verse was from the next chapter in Hosea, chapter 7, verse 14. God is complaining, they do not cry to me from their heart. So God is saying his people have not turned their hearts towards him. God's concern is our heart, the direction and strength of our response to him. And he's looking and he's watching and he is noting, when are we turning to him with our hearts, with our integrity, with our full intention, putting him first, choosing him first? I'm getting into a rhythm of having more spare time now, as you know. I may have mentioned I'm semi-retired, and 2 weeks' time I shall be fully retired. And a recent trip, I went to Truro on Friday by train, as one does, and came back again the same day by train. And I had time to reflect on these verses. And these are times when I bring my heart to the Lord, when I receive his love into my heart, when I spend time thanking him, focusing on everything he's done for me and everything he's planning to do, to give me, to be. Had a lovely conversation too with a lady on Truro Station. I'm sometimes fairly antisocial on my railway trips because I want to read my books, but I do pray for people around me. And I had quite a while to wait on Truro Station. And there was a young lady sitting there before I was, sitting at a table. And I came and sat at the table just behind her. And I prayed for her silently. God would bless her and give her some blessing as a result of our talk. And actually, she turned to me and asked me a question about her, where she was going. And I had enough knowledge to be able to answer her question. We got into conversation about what's wrong with the world. And I explained that I was a Christian and that the world was not as God made it, but it's gone wrong. And she was a young student, just done a year of engineering studies, was going back to Malaya for a few months for a holiday to see her family, and then coming back again. She was very interested in what I was saying, because her friends are atheists and they just say, no, there's no God, and they don't even discuss it. And I was able to just quietly share with her, and she said, it's just lovely talking to you, because you are someone who is listening and you are interacting with me in the end, I actually gave her a tract, which is something I don't often do. I do keep some in my briefcase, but 19 times out of 20, I forget to leave a tract on the train, which is one of the things that I think is quite nice to do. You never know, God might cause someone to just be blessed by the message in it. And we said cheerio. I don't know, why do I say that? It's my 1 minute testimony. Wherever we are, I think my message is, focus on praying for someone, even if we can't talk to them, and maybe God will open up at the chance to talk. The third verse I saw in this chapter is Hosea 11, verse 8. I'd like you to turn to this verse, because one of the mistakes that the Greek philosophers made was to say that God was the unmoved mover. They said that he couldn't be influenced by emotion. He was the one who made everything, and he was distant from it. And some of them said that material creation was actually inferior and evil and corrupt, and God couldn't have anything to do with it because he was quite separate. And they said God could not be affected by emotion in any way, otherwise he'd be less than perfect. And yet, if we look at Hosea 11, verse 8, here is God's internal turmoil. Here's a photograph of God, God's heart. He says, "How can I give you up, O Ephraim? How can I surrender you, O Israel?" You may remember Ephraim was the son of Joseph, who got the birthright. And Joseph was the son of Jacob, who got the birthright. So the birthright comes from Jacob through Joseph to Ephraim, and he's used sometimes as a synonym for the northern kingdom of the 10 tribes. "How can I surrender you, O Israel? How can I make you like Admah? How can I treat you like Zeboim?" Which are two scenes of God's judgment previously. God says, "My heart is turned over within me. All my compassions are kindled. I will not execute my fierce anger. I will not destroy Ephraim again. For I am God and not man, the Holy One in your midst. I will not come in wrath." God is saying, my heart is full of emotions. Like a parent and like a lover who sees their child or their wife harming themselves. And the emotion is anger that their lover, their beloved, is being spoiled and harmed. Hatred of the evil. And passionate love and desire that their son or their spouse would turn back to him. This is the turmoil of a parent, the turmoil of a lover. God describes his heart in this way. My heart is turned over. So God is not the unmoved mover. He's passionate, passionate lover. He almost had a kind of dilemma, if you can imagine God having a dilemma. How can we imagine God having a dilemma? He gives himself a dilemma with his love. He wants to draw us to him, yet he doesn't want to force us toward him. He wants to encourage us to turn towards him. He doesn't want to punish us, yet he knows that sometimes the thing that will turn us in his direction is some kind of adversity or some kind of challenge. God's turmoil. There's a couple of other times in Scripture when this word is used. Remember when Joseph in Egypt saw his brother Benjamin among the sons of Jacob who came to Egypt to buy grain. And Joseph had this compassion, his heart was turned over, that same emotional turmoil, seeing his brother and yet the conflict of emotions. And likewise, that term is used again. Remember in the reign of King Solomon, that very wise King Solomon, one day two women came to him and one baby. Both claiming the baby. Remember Solomon's wisdom. He said, "Get a sword, cut the child in two, give it half each." And the one who wasn't the mother said, "Yeah, fair deal." And the one who was the mother, "No, give the child to the other woman." And the word is used of her her turmoil, that she. So you see, it's this. This is God's heart toward us, towards you on your journey. Maybe you've turned from the Lord. Maybe you've gone on a side path. He's not wanting to punish you. He's longing for you and me to come back, to return. That's the message of this book. Return, O Israel. Because God is like a father, like a lover. The heart of God is, we get clues through Scripture, and this is one of the biggest clues of what God's heart is like. And yet he says, I'm God and not man. He's distinguishing between himself and us, and yet he's saying, even though I'm God, look at this turmoil that I have. And it's a mystery, it's a holy mystery. We'll never get to the depth of it. But he invites us. Last week I was talking about God inviting us into his heart. He invites us into that depth, that turmoil, mixed emotions, if you like. And as we walk with God, we will find that we are stirred up in certain ways which correspond to God's love and God's hatred. And maybe that's a challenge to some of you. Maybe God wants you to be stirred up in some way. Maybe to be provoked by some injustice or by some evil or some horror that he wants you to be involved in. Speaking into it or taking action or supporting those who are being mistreated or exploited or whatever. God gives us a glimpse of his heart. He puts that in us. So that was Hosea 11:8. How can I give you up? My heart is turned over within me. Together my compassions are kindled. So maybe as you're thinking of writing or whatever, some relation to what God's heart is saying to you, or how you want to connect with God's passions. Maybe it's you want to ask him to warm your heart or direct your heart in a certain way. God, very much interested in our hearts. And how many more verses have we got? All right, Hosea 10 verse 12 is the fourth of my five. Hosea 10 verse 12. Sow with a view to righteousness, reap in accordance with kindness, break up your fallow ground, for it's time to seek the Lord until he comes to rain righteousness on you. So here's an agricultural or farming picture that God gives. He says life is like a garden. Life is like a farmyard, a field, where we are sowing things. And there's two important principles with sowing. Number one is what you get back is what you sow. And number two is how much you get back is related to how much you sow. Obviously, there's exceptions to the second one. Sometimes you have a good harvest, sometimes you have a small harvest. But you never get back a different fruit from the seed that you sow. And there's a challenge. What are we sowing in our lives, in the lives of others? What are we cultivating? In my case, the choice is often between being grateful to God and being resentful because I feel I've been deprived of something or I'm missing something. That's, for me, is often a challenge. God invites me to choose to be grateful in my present circumstances or some event or some relationship, as opposed to being resentful or cross or whatever, or angry about it. There's God's choice. I'm given the opportunity to sow a seed of peace as opposed to sowing a seed of anger. And I don't know what choices you've got in what you're going to sow in different situations you may be in. If your action or your word, if you think of it as a seed and you're putting it, trusting God to make it grow, maybe that can give a bit more context to some challenges in our lives or some choices we're facing. What seed are you going to sow? And how generously are you going to sow? God loves the hilarious giver, you remember that verse, the one who loves to give. And finally, the fifth verse, Hosea 12, verse 3. Talking about character Jacob in the Old Testament, you remember Jacob the deceiver, Jacob the manipulator. 12 verse 3. In the womb he took his brother by the heel. Don't know if you remember the story. He was a twin brother. And he came out gripping his elder brother's heel. And that was a kind of metaphor for Jacob's life. Grasping. Trying to get his own advantage. Trying to manipulate. And this verse contrasts two episodes in his life. In the womb he took his brother by the heel. And in his maturity he contended with God. This is referring to the time when he was an adult, when the angel of God appeared to him and wrestled with him. So, angel of God appeared in human form and wrestled with Jacob. And you remember the story that Jacob wrestled with him all night, and Jacob sensed this is a messenger from God. And he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And you remember God gave him a blessing. God also touched his hip, so that his hip was injured, and he remembered that wrestling match for the rest of his life because of his limp. And there's a whole load of things we can learn from that story. But what I saw in this verse was in his maturity he contended with God. He wrestled with the angel. Now, I don't know whether what I'm going to say arises directly from the mind of the prophet when he wrote this verse, but I sense that for some of us who are seeking maturity with God, as opposed to simply living like babies and drinking milk, there's times when we have to wrestle with God. There's times when we have to take hold of something God has said, grasp him, wrestle with him, put forth energy to get what it is that God's giving us, what God's offering us. And I don't know how that applies to you. There's the balance in the Christian life between resting and wrestling. Or if you like, nestling and wrestling. Times when we are receiving God's strength, his comfort, his support, his consolation, and other times when he's inviting us to grip him, to get hold of something that's a little bit tougher. Maybe to inquire why God hasn't answered a particular prayer, or maybe spend more time, more fervently, asking him for something, whatever it might be, and wrestling. So there's the third kind of picture, if you like, which I'm going to sum up with. The first one was about the journey. How is our journey with God? Are we still pressing on, making the steps towards God, walking with God? The second was about the field or the garden. What are we choosing to sow? Realizing that what we sow will have long-term effects. And the third one, is God inviting us to some kind of wrestling match? And I don't know how to apply that to any one of you, but there we are. And the foundation of this is what God says. How can I give you up? My heart is turned over within me. I want you to respond to me. I've loved you with an everlasting love. I've drawn you with cords of love. So I want to give you a minute or so just to contemplate, just to write on your bit of paper anything that might be relevant, or make a personal note or an agreement with God silently about whatever God is saying.